Friday, July 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the FBI investigates the motive of a gunman who killed four Marines in Tennessee. We meet a Turkish immigrant who now crafts unique jewelry in New York City. And a new documentary explores the tragic life and remarkable music of singer Amy Winehouse. It's all ahead. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation agent in charge of investigating the shootings at two military facilities Thursday in the southern city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, said the agency is looking into the shooter's motive. Late Thursday night, Ed Reinhold also said investigators cannot say whether the gunman has ties to any terrorist group.
We are checking every possible place that he could reside or could have resided, visited, where he's shopped, where he went to school, who his friends were, if he worked out at a gym, every possible lead. So we have information that he's been in various locations, and we will check each and every one of those.
Reinhold said investigators have no idea why 24-year-old Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz went on a rampage, killing four U.S. Marines and wounding two other servicemen in the shootings. The gunman was also killed. Police stormed his house in Hickson, Tennessee, just across the Tennessee River from Chattanooga, looking for anything that may explain his actions. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent, and she spoke with me about the investigation. So far, what is known about these shootings?
Well, so far, the FBI is saying that the gunman was not, as of yet, not connected with any international terrorist organizations. This is still being investigated. The FBI is taking the lead because, apparently, according to defense officials, the gunman never did step foot on federal territory, but because of the terror charges, that's why they were taking the lead. But this is mostly for Chattanooga law enforcement officials to look into, and they have been working with defense officials, with FBI officials, to try to get to the bottom of this. We know, as of now, there have been four Marines that were killed at the second shooting, and also one sailor was seriously wounded in that shooting. The first shooting was a drive-by at a recruiting center, and the gunman just went through and sprayed about 25 to 30 rounds into the facility. One Marine recruiter was wounded, and the other Marines, according to some Marines that I've been able to speak to, were able to get out through the back. And that is what we know so far.
Now, the alleged gunman, Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz, as at the moment, is it known whether he had any connections to any international terror groups?
Well, the FBI updated reporters late last night, and they said that at this point they did not see a connection between the shooter and any international terror groups.
Now, what is known about him, apparently he was born in Kuwait, but I believe he came to live in the United States when he was very young.
Yes, I'm still not very familiar with his background, but he was from Kuwait, and he's been a naturalized U.S. citizen since arriving here many, many years ago.
So far, and as we say, the investigation is underway, it would seem as though he was what you call a lone wolf person. And apparently, authorities say they are very difficult to trace, such as the two brothers involved in the Boston bombing in 2013.
Yes, that is the hardest part. All officials with the FBI, defense officials, everybody has increased their security through today. Today marks the end of Ramadan, and the Islamic State had called for increased attacks against infidels, as they said, throughout the entire holy month. So people had been on alert, but no specific chatter from any terror organizations had mentioned any recruiting centers specifically. But lone wolves have, that's the hard part about lone wolves. They don't actually have to be connected to the terror group to try to work for the terror group. Now, at this point, the FBI says that there's no connection. They did say that an intelligence group has said that he wrote on his blog that life is short and bitter. So this may just be a very disgruntled human being that has absolutely no connections. We don't know yet. But the hardest part about lone wolves is it could be anyone. It could be people with no prior records that just get disillusioned by these terror groups.
And certainly groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda have a strong presence on the internet.
Yes, and President Obama visited the Pentagon last week, and I was there, and he was telling reporters that the United States needs to step it up when it comes to balancing out the recruiting techniques that the Islamic State is doing. The Islamic State has a very strong hold on social media, be it Twitter, be it Facebook, working international angles through the internet. And so the United States is really going to try to step up its game to try to push back at that, to try to say this is just talk. This isn't really what's going on the ground. The United States is going to go after you if you decide to fight for this group.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Carla, for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. And Andrew, I guess we're going to hear a bit more about the Chattanooga shooting.
Absolutely. The name that's breaking this morning on social media and it's trending on social media is Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Sullivan. He's the first victim of the shooting to be identified. Joined the Marines in 1997, recipient of two Purple Hearts. So people mourning his loss, and I'm sure that as the other names come out, we're going to see those names pop up on social media stories about those people that people will be sharing there. As you heard Carla just talk about in her report, today is the end of Ramadan, so hashtag Eid Mubarak is trending worldwide as well. But it's very peaceful, people celebrating, not using social media, not using this hashtag for anything hateful. So trying to show a peaceful side to Islam and to the celebration as the end of Ramadan commences. We're also looking at today on social media, hashtag MH17. Today is the one-year anniversary of the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, 298 people killed in that crash. A lot of people commenting on social media that we still don't know how the plane went down, why the plane went down, who's responsible, but a lot of speculation on social media about that, even a year after the fact. And a couple people even bringing in MH370, the flight that went missing, going from Kuala Lumpur to China, bringing that flight in along with this one, even though that one has been missing for over a year. And since it is Friday, we like to end on kind of a lighter note, especially with a heavy
yes.
news week that we've had. Today is World Emoji Day. So emojis
Never heard of that.
Emojis are the little icons that you have, you know, smiley faces and those kind of things that you text to people. And a lot of people don't realize they're called emojis. They just call them, you know, smiley faces or whatnot.
Yeah.
But hashtag World Emoji Day is trending. And what people are doing is spelling out kind of their day or their year using emojis. I saw this actually. Roger Federer did this during Wimbledon. He spelled out my day at Wimbledon and used emojis to show his practice schedule. He was getting a cup of coffee. He was, you know, stretching, took a nap, that kind of thing. The other positive coming out of this is that a lot of people are using this celebration to note Apple's racially diverse emojis they came out with earlier this year, where you can have emojis of different skin tones and skin colors, saying that's a step forward. So even though it's a silly little cartoon kind of thing, it can actually have a big social statement and a big impact.
Well, happy Emoji Day, everyone. Thank you. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky, and this is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
Why does a wailing baby or someone screaming seem to grab our attention and stand out from other sounds, even if we're surrounded by a cacophony of loud noises? An international group of scientists say they've found a key reason why a scream is such an effective form of human communication. They say their research has provided evidence that human screams happen to have its own distinctive acoustic attributes that sets them apart from other sounds. They call the particular attribute that makes a scream so unique roughness, which is a measure of how fast a sound changes in loudness. They found that the more roughness contained within a sound, the more it activated the region of the brain used for processing and remembering fear. The research team thinks that their findings could help designers and manufacturers improve the effectiveness of alarm devices. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new documentary explores the life of the late singer Amy Winehouse. We're going to listen in on another conversation between International Edition's Adam Phillips and a new American who has made a life for himself here in the U.S. This time we'll meet Gorhan Orhan, a Turkish master jeweler and designer whose work can be purchased for a hefty price in over 200 American luxury outlets. Adam, before we listen in, tell us a little more about Gorhan.
I first saw Gorhan's work while walking past his store right near the VOA studios here in New York, and I was struck by his designs. They're gorgeous, non-blingy, and they're often hammered from pure gold using a rare technique that he learned from Ottoman documents back in his native Istanbul. He came to New York in 1997 with his Australian-born immigrant wife, Fiona, and she handles the corporate side of things. That's why Gorhan says that coming to America was both a business and a heart decision for him. I spoke with him at his workshop, which adjoins the retail space, and asked him what was most tough about becoming a new American.
The most important challenge was that you cannot handle the language in the way you want to. And Fiona is Australian, and she's one of the sharpest English speakers, so we complete each other, I should say. Hard side is always keeping things intact.
Culturally, what is it that might be different here for you as a business person? I mean, I noticed that you gave me a cup of coffee, which is a very Turkish thing to do as soon as I walked in. Is there something about the culture of New York commerce and the competition of all that that you needed to learn that you can't read in a book?
No. Business is business all over the world. If they are not offering you coffee in a New York store, it's their loss, in my opinion. Money becomes more important than many things.
But you do serve coffee here. Tell me a little bit about what that hospitality is, the idea of coffee and welcoming the guests.
We have a saying, a cup of coffee gives you 40 years worth of friendship. If two persons are getting together for a bargain on something, or maybe a kind of disagreement, they first put coffee because that gives them the friendship feeling. Then they start talking. But it needs to be Turkish coffee, first of all. I have a full set here. I can make you Turkish coffee next time.
Tell me a little bit about how you've integrated that sensibility into your work here. I mean, I'd like to know what you bring to New York in that sense.
I tried hard to make it homey, not intimidating. And we become friends with our clients here. Mm-hmm. They come with their old jewelry to turn it into something that they may like to wear. And sometimes they come with their loose stones. We sit down, we plan, we draw. Have fun. Now, for example, I have a ring to finish and I have a watch to finish. Alice will come soon for photo shoot. So it's not routine. And I love it. When you are making more than 40, 50 different styles each season, it may look like art to you, but even art needs to turn into money at one point. That's also a creative process. I love that part of the business too.
Would you have any advice for people who want to come over here or are here now? They want to come to America and pursue the American dream. What would you tell them?
I know the idea of American dream, and I believe that dream is your own dream. It doesn't matter where you are. Opportunities are everywhere. But this is the best city in the world. No complaints.
Thanks, Adam. Gorhan sounds like a real gem.
That he is. No free samples, however. Anyway, I'll talk with you next week, Sarah.
Okay, Adam. And that is International Edition's Adam Phillips. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. British singer and five-time Grammy winner Amy Winehouse died 4 years ago at the age of 27. A new documentary tells her story in her own words and those of the people around her. International Edition's David Byrd speaks with Shauna Renee about the film Amy.
Shauna, this movie is something that gives a... First of all, the director is Asif Kapadia, and he doesn't use any narration. He just uses archival film of Amy Winehouse's life.
Correct. He allows Amy and the people around Amy to tell her story. And there is no narrative there other than what she explains of herself, other than what we see her go through from very young. It starts when she's a very young girl, I think 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And then it goes all the way up until, you know, her unfortunate demise.
Now, she died from alcohol poisoning. She
yes.
had a problem with, I think the movie brings this out, she had a problem with an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
She also had problems with alcohol and drugs.
And drugs, yes.
And, of course, her most famous pop hit was Rehab.
Right.
The more famous she got, the less intimate the movie is. And it's really, it's kind of sad. It's a sad portrayal of somebody who said all she was ever going to be was a singer.
Yeah. And I think it's indicative of life in that realm, the life of a celebrity. The more famous they become, the more sort of internal and alone and lonely they become because they don't know who they can trust.
Mm.
They're not sure whether or not the people who are in their immediate circle can be people that they trust. And she kind of deals with that a little bit. In the footage, she's asked questions about, do you know who you can trust? Do you have people around you who you can trust? Even her husband's, the relationship she had with her husband was called into question. He was said to be enabling her alcoholism and maybe to a lesser degree her drug use.
Right.
And that was supposed to be the most intimate relationship that she had.
And there was a relationship, kind of a semi-toxic relationship with her dad and with her manager. They were both kind of... One thing I've heard about this movie is it shows how the people around her never really talked to one another.
Right.
They talked to her, but they never really talked to one another about her to get her the help that she needed. And it's really sad because she died at 27 years old.
Yeah. And her father is not very happy with this movie. Her father has come out publicly and said that he doesn't believe she would have appreciated the way that she's being portrayed in this movie. And he certainly doesn't appreciate the way he's being portrayed in this movie as someone who had no clue, no concern for what was going on in her life.
Mm. Well, the documentary is called Amy, and it opens in wide release here in the United States this week?
This weekend, yes. And one of the interesting things about this from a musical perspective is that now people who may not have been familiar with her music or forgot about it are downloading it. So her albums are seeing a resurgence of popularity. And I just think it's a beautiful thing because she was such a talented musician and singer and songwriter. So at least she gets a second life, if you will.
If you want to send Shauna a message on Twitter, she is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also hit her up at VOA underscore music. We, of course, are at VOA underscore IE.
The music of singer Amy Winehouse. I happened to see that film last weekend. I really enjoyed it. I was quite a big fan of Amy Winehouse, and she did have tragedy in her life, but she was a very, very talented singer. Anyone who enjoys jazz, some blues, really should go to see it because it's quite something. Actually, Amy Winehouse sang at a festival, not here in Washington, but the Baltimore area in 2007, and I had wanted to go, but I was out of time. But I was glad to see this movie. Anyway, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us, and please have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Iraqi government has announced it is leading a major military push to retake Iraq's Anbar province from ISIL, which controls two of the province's major cities, Ramadi and Fallujah. Clearing ISIL from Anbar is no easy task. As President Barack Obama recently noted, ISIL has dug in among innocent civilian populations in the urban areas under its control. But as local forces take on ISIL militarily, it is also important for ISIL sympathizers in Iraq, Syria, and beyond to hear the stories of those who were once attracted to the propaganda promulgated by ISIL, but who have come to reject it. As President Obama has said, to ultimately defeat terrorist groups like ISIL, it is necessary to discredit their ideology, the twisted thinking that draws vulnerable people into their ranks. Who can do that better than those who have seen it from the inside at close quarters? Take, for example, a former ISIL fighter from Fallujah known as Hamza, who volunteered to join ISIL last summer, but who defected after 6 months. He told the Independent newspaper he joined the group for religious reasons, but was appalled by the beheadings, by being asked to execute Sunnis whom he knew, and by being offered captured young Yazidi women for sexual pleasure. At the beginning, I thought they were fighting for Allah, but later I discovered they were far from the principles of Islam, he said. The justice they were calling for when they first arrived in Fallujah turned out to be only words. Or the Syrian teenager Youssef Barho, recruited by ISIL to be a suicide bomber, who eventually gave himself up to Iraqi authorities. He told the New York Times last year he joined ISIL willingly because he believed in Islam and had been convinced by ISIL that if he didn't join the group, Shiites would come and rape his mother. Soon, however, he said, I noticed things that were different from Islam. He noted, for example, that ISIL inflicted severe punishments on men in the city who were caught smoking cigarettes. Yet in camp, he saw fighters smoking. He witnessed homosexual encounters between the fighters, and he became increasingly disturbed by the killing of innocent people. President Obama has said that the international fight against ISIL is a battle against terrorists who distort Islam and whose victims are mostly Muslims. Those who have experienced ISIL firsthand and have turned away say the same.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.